Next is in re application for permit to carry a handgun. May we please have appearances of counsel? Mr. Leibowitz?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Respectfully, this court should not require hearings in every case, but rather should leave it to the discretion of the Superior Court judge who is reviewing a carry permit application to determine whether or not a hearing is necessary. The current process, especially in light of the recent directive, properly protects an individual's interests in due process, and therefore nothing should really change. As Justice Albin had mentioned, a fulsome application is likely to eliminate the need for hearings at all because everything will be set forth in these uncontested applications that have no limits on their pages, have no limits on the size, have no limits on what can be included. For this reason, the state would request that you affirm the decision of the appellate division and rule that the Superior Court judge reviewing can determine whether or not a hearing would be appropriate. Based on the way argument went before lunch, it appears that the interpretation in the directive is almost going to be read as a hearing should be granted in every case in which the court anticipates denying the application. Respectfully, I would submit that that goes a step too far. I say that only insofar as for legal determinations that are such as justifiable need, that might not be necessary. There may be no benefit in having a hearing. If the court doesn't really have a question per se, but thinks that the applicant missed the mark, there is no point in having a hearing. So while Mr. Carlstrom's letter of need indicated he was going to be working at AMC theaters with soft targets, if the court finds he lacks specificity, he didn't meet his burden. Should the court have granted a hearing in that case? Respectfully, I would submit no. But even in the current process, where the appellant has the opportunity to file an appeal, he could raise that issue before the appellate division and say the court abused its discretion. It should have granted a hearing such that I could have supplemented the record. But he did not. He just said, I was required to have a hearing as a matter of due process. Unless your honors have any questions.
So the judge makes, under your interpretation, the judge makes a final determination on their recourse to an appeal on the record, not present new evidence, not be able to persuade the judge. How does that comply with due process, with fundamental fairness, substantive and procedural due process? Under your interpretation, the judge decides it all and the only recourse is to the appellate division. How does that provide any fairness to the applicant?
The law is quite clear as to what an applicant needs to provide, and as mentioned,
the law is quite clear about a lot of issues. That's what we hear a lot at work every week.
Understood.
Because we have to take cases, and the law is reportedly quite clear on all issues.
So because the applicant has the opportunity to present a uncontested application that covers anything that deems appropriate for the court to consider, it seems as though they receive notice, they receive opportunity, that the judge who's making this determination in a legal setting comports with due process requirements. Although the applicant doesn't get notice before it's denied, it is he who submits the application and has the opportunity to present the case in the first instance. This would be slightly different, admittedly, if the prosecutor chimes in and says, these are reasons that the applicant's application should be denied, because I would agree that maybe he should have an opportunity to respond, be it in letter or at a hearing. But as far as just necessarily getting a hearing because it seems unfair, I think that is a step too far.
Because a lot's going to depend on how much information the chief of police provides. In this particular case, it was very small paragraphs. Maybe if it was a couple of pages and he was identifying specifically why he thought there was a need. For example, if there was insufficient coverage for movie theaters because the local police couldn't do it while on duty or off duty, maybe those would be issues that might be of concern to the court. But then the applicant is going to be dependent upon the chief of police doing that sort of fulsome write-up beforehand, no?
Correct, but the burden lies with the applicant and not the chief. And if they have an informal discussion, as counsel had indicated, that incorporated additional material, there would be no reason that the applicant couldn't supplement the application before it goes to the superior court. If there are additional facts that seemed appropriate, the applicant could have included those in the application as it's being reviewed
by
the
chief.
Why
would you supplement an application if you've been successful? Why would you try to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory? Your application is successful, why would you add to it, perhaps create a problem that was not present?
Well, as far as if there's informal discussions, clearly that's outside of the four corners of your application, and thus your application was insufficient. So it would be prudent for the applicant to then memorialize what was discussed, as those were the prevailing factors that were considered by the chief that sort of turned it. Because if you're having this informal discussion to convince the chief, it's clear that your application was insufficient on its face. Yeah. So some further...
That's not so clear. Could just be additional information that was going to be granted, but wanted to cross some T's, dot some I's. It's not clear necessarily that it was going to be denied.
How long are these hearings from?
How
long are these hearings?
I have never been present at one. In my 5-year tenure at the office, I've only heard of one occurring, and they admittedly are not that long in duration. But that was a mental health issue as opposed to a justifiable need issue.
So what would be wrong if, you know, all the participants show up in court and the judge says, I've read over everything. Do you have anything to add to what is on the record?
So
and then at that point the applicant can make a decision whether or not there's a need to add, and maybe the judge will say, these are my concerns. I've read the papers, but I still have these continuing concerns. Okay, now I'm going to give you an opportunity to address them. What would be wrong with that?
From a, I don't know if it's a pragmatic standpoint, as far as the judge providing an applicant an opportunity to address factors outside the four corners that haven't been vetted by the chief as far as being true or not. Because essentially as the judge reviews it, it seems as though the application is taken as everything is accurate because the chief has approved it. As far as the legal determination of justifiable need, that's a de novo review.
The judge may have concern. The applicant may not be a mind reader. And that's true, you know, and the state may have concerns also, may want to put on witnesses. I can very easily imagine a scenario where the chief of police has granted a permit and the prosecutor or the assistant prosecutor in that court doesn't think it should be and may want to present testimony or may want to cross-examine the chief about it, may think that the reasons that were given were inadequate or not fully covered. You can envision that scenario.
I could envision that scenario. And upon request from the prosecutor that a hearing be held, the current structure permits the court to grant a hearing and to take testimony and witnesses.
So whether in some or all cases like this where there is a hearing, what should the shape of the hearing be?
That is a good question, Your Honor. I know amicus has addressed it in their brief, and as they represent the Attorney General's office, I would generally defer to them. I would ask that it not be...
You took the hot seat to go first. So
I was called by Your Honor, but...
That's the seat.
Fair enough. I would ask that it not be immediately an evidentiary hearing, because as Your Honors have recognized, much of this can be done by way of proffer, could be done by an attorney, although many of these are lay witnesses or laymen who write these applications, to sort of ask the simple question of, is there anything additional that you'd like to address, or can you explain why there's justifiable need? And if upon learning of more information says, all right, I'd like something for you to prove that to me, that may be appropriate by way of witness testimony. If it's, I'm going to work at this movie theater that needs to be protected and they've had all these incidences, you can provide reports that alleviates the need for live testimony. So I would request that it not, if a hearing is going to be granted, that it not immediately be an evidentiary hearing, but rather something to potentially address the concerns of the judge by way of oral argument with a prima facie showing, like a PCR hearing, before we get to the next step, of something of that nature, such that it is somewhat expedited and addresses the true heart of the issue.
Questions, anyone? Anything else you'd like to add?
How many applications generally, perhaps the Attorney General can answer that better. How many applications for permits to carry in each county, in your county, in a year?
Unfortunately, I can't answer that because Union County, the prosecutor's office, isn't usually asked to weigh in on these, so it's only until there's been an appeal. I can only think of five or ten over the several years that I've been there.
Over the several years?
Correct.
So there's really no dire need to expedite these things, or not that many?
Well, Your Honors have set forth a 30-day time frame for them to be addressed, and I understand that this goes towards someone's employment. So there might be some desire to ensure that the hearings don't linger and be resolved, but yes, I don't imagine that they would go beyond a day if a court had to hear.
You're telling us that there aren't a large number of these appeals, correct?
As far as I'm aware, correct. And in Union County, that is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I'll start by saying that when I was an assistant prosecutor in Essex County, I used to handle the firearms docket along with one of my colleagues, so I can answer some of your questions, at least as things were about 2 or 3 years ago in Essex County. Since this court granted certification, the AOC issued Directive 0619, stating simply that there would be hearings, as Your Honors seem to have interpreted it, if there is some inclination towards denial. That would seem to be the sort of situation in which there would be questions by the court. If the court doesn't have any questions, it would seem to be the case that the court would approve the application. The amicus attorney general suggests to the court that it not be automatically an evidentiary hearing that's granted, since the AOC directive is silent as to the type of the hearing, how the hearing would take place, who would be present at the hearing. That's where the court would come in and offer some guidance, and I think some guidance would be necessary. As a preliminary step, I think these should take the form as sort of our PCR hearings take place. First, there should be a hearing, an opportunity to be heard, about what the applicant would proffer if an evidentiary hearing would be granted, and if and only if the applicant offers a prima facie case of succeeding on the application at the evidentiary hearing, then the evidentiary hearing would take place. This would sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were, with some of these applications. As both counsel noted, many of these applicants tend to be pro se, so this sort of informal non-evidentiary hearing would be the opportunity to, as Justice Albin mentioned, have the judge say to the applicant, is there anything else you'd like to tell me?
But if in contrast to PCR hearings, which is obviously the source of your framework, this is a very low volume type of situation, as we understand it.
It potentially can be high volume. So I can give you some sense of how many applications went through Essex County as of about 3 years ago. Essex County no longer follows this process. At the time, it was a prosecutor approval process in Essex County. So I myself would review about 20 to 30 applications a month for justifiable need to make sure the application was complete, to make sure the background check was correct. And my colleague would review about as many herself, as it were. So that would come out to being about 40 to 60 applications
a
month.
But in terms of contested cases where someone actually wanted to press it hard enough, or either won before the police chief or lost and wanted to invoke the statutory right for a hearing, do you have?
Of the 20 to 30 that we would review, there would be about five in each person's batch that we would object to, and usually then the court would have questions and hold a hearing. So we would accumulate maybe 3 to 5 a month per prosecutor.
What was the practice in Essex as to the nature of the hearing?
It sort of depended on what the applicant brought to the hearing. So sometimes applicants would come in and just list all of the reasons that they should be granted a carry permit, including reasons that weren't the basis for denial. The practice at the time in Essex County was to issue a letter saying you lack justifiable need, your background is questionable, what have you. Whatever the statutory basis in 2C58 was, the judges had a practice of issuing a letter. Nonetheless, applicants would sometimes come in with numerous character witnesses testifying to what a good person they are, but really the issue is justifiable need. So the proffer hearing that the Attorney General proposes is an opportunity to First, make sure that the applicant is on the right track with what he or she would present at an evidentiary hearing. And two, make sure that what's being proffered would actually prove these things. So for example, calling the police chief from Roselle Park, he might have personal knowledge of movie theaters in Roselle Park and what the difficulties are, but he's not going to have personal knowledge. I believe the application at PA6 reflects that the applicant would be working at movie theaters throughout Somerset, Monmouth, and Union counties. The Roselle Park police chief would be merely speculating about the threats that are posed to these other movie theaters.
How often do chiefs of police or their delegates speak at these hearings?
I would say about a third of the time. Those would be cases of justifiable need, those would be cases where the background was somewhat in question and they would be the conduit for talking about background issues.
In denial cases?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
In denial cases?
In cases where the police chief denied or I as the prosecutor had some sort of objection if it was based on background. Usually in justifiable need cases, the applicant would call his or her employer, and sometimes the employer would have really helpful information. I can think of one case where if the information had been provided from the beginning and it seemed to be credible, I don't think I would have had an issue with the issuance. In that case, the young man worked for a funeral home in Newark. I had objected because all that it said was, I work for a funeral home, the funeral home needs a security guard. That doesn't meet our exacting justifiable need standard in New Jersey. So I registered an objection, there was a hearing, and the young man's boss came in and testified that he was the only funeral home in that part of Newark that served gang funerals, and that there had been shootings. The judge credited his testimony and issued the carry permit because there had been specific previous attacks on the funeral home. In contrast, there had been cases involving bakeries, for example, where they say they need a security guard, but their employer is unable to testify about something specific that had happened at the bakery. And in those cases, the carry permit was properly denied, having failed to meet justifiable need, even through the employer's testimony.
How long are these hearings, generally?
They can be, I would say about an hour. I would say about an hour if the issues are limited. However, Justice Albin, I'll caution that this is in the situation where there's no sort of pre-hearing where we're talking about what would be proffered. And I can think of several cases that languished for months and we came back because the applicant would present some evidence, the judge would indicate that he was willing, that he was leaning towards denial, and then the applicant would say, sort of like Scheherazade in A Thousand Arabian Nights, oh wait, but I have more, can we come back another day? And I can think of one case, I believe it lasted about a year and a half, we would come back every 3 or 4 months, the applicant and I got to know each other very well.
But I'm really talking about the typical case, not the outlier.
Unfortunately, I am talking about cases that are not atypical, that the applicant would say, but wait, there's more. You know, once he gets the temperature of the water, he miraculously has one more person he'd like to put on at the next hearing. So that's where these proffer hearings would be useful, that the applicant would be at least forced to say, I'm going to have my employer testify. He's going to talk about these specific shootings that took place at these specific addresses that I would be guarding as part of my employment.
Other questions, anyone?
No.
Thank you, Ms. Rowe.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. Next.